Now we're holding on page Samach Zion in Nidorim at the top, middle of Os Lamed Zion. The Mishnah had talked about cases where a person makes a neder not to eat cooked foods, and the Gemara had discussed what exactly is included in that category, and that led us into the whole discussion about different kinds of eating, and then minyan versus the inyan about different stories with the Chachamim. Page Samach Zayin at the top of Nedarim. So now, the one thing Mishnah mentions is also that among the things that a person would, that among the things that are in that category of cooked things is something called beitza trumita, which the Gemara defines as a type of egg prepared in a certain special way, which the Gemara explains it's very difficult to prepare properly, and somebody who prepares it is a very valuable person. So that leads the Gemara into another example of foods that are very difficult to prepare and that people would pay a lot of money to learn how to prepare them. The Gemara says, "Ahu gavra de yohav abdul chavre." There was a person who gave a slave to somebody else. Magmuri alpha mini lafti. This slave was supposed to teach the other person 1,000 different ways of preparing lafti. Lafti is a concoction. The Gemara explains it's made from figs. We find them, and so it was some kind of porridge or concoction or something like that, made out of crushed figs. We find elsewhere that it was a good food for sick people. So here, this person wanted to learn 1,000 different ways of making it, and the slave was supposed to teach that to him. Agmar tamni meya. In the end, he only ate him. In the end, he only taught him 800. So the person who had hired the slave for this purpose, or who had paid the other person to lend him a slave for a while for this purpose, took the other person to a din torah in front of Rebbe. You promised 1,000, you only gave me 800. Omer Rebbe, so Rebbe was very taken aback by this sirachbus, this 1,000 different ways of preparing one dish. So Omer Rebbe, Avisenu Omrim Nashinu Torah. Our ancestors said in Eicha, we have forgotten goodness. Meaning, in other words, like at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, they had seen goodness, they had seen wealth and opulence like that, and now in the time of the Churban, we've forgotten it. But Rebbe says, Onu Afilu Beinenu Lo Ra'inu. We have never even seen such a thing with our own eyes that people should be living like that so extravagantly. I never heard of such a thing. So on the face of it, the story is just that. Although there is a very interesting explanation, there's an explanation from the first Savrana Rebbe, the Moshe Tzvi. He was a Talmud of the Rav Levi Yitzchok Lidichever, another Rebbeim of that time. He himself became a prominent Rebbe of his time. Anyway, he gives a fascinating explanation about this. The deeper meaning behind this 1,000 kinds of laughter, he says, is that the word laughter is related to a word that means to connect together, like Naftuli Alekim Niftalti. So it means 1,000 different Yehudim. This person wanted the other one to teach him 1,000 different Yehudim, 1,000 different Kavonas in davening and how to connect with the Eivishter. In the end, he only taught him 800 of them. Why? Because Rav Moshe Tzvi explains, based on a drosha from a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, that there are 1,000 of them, but 200 of them are available only to somebody who was never pregimus brisa, somebody who always maintained the kedusha of his bris, as far as zera, as far as zera levatola, as far as bias asuris, etc. So now he takes the other guy in front of Rebbe. Rebbe was Rabbeinu HaKadosh. We know he never even put his hand below his waist, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, so he's the ultimate example of kedusha, so let Rebbe teach him the other 200. But what happened was, he goes on to explain, now Dovra Malach, Rebbe's ancestor, had only been able to achieve 800 of them himself. In a similar vein, the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan that even though the Pasuk says that a Jew should be able to, when we're listening to what Hashem wants, one Jew should be able to kill 1,000 of the enemy, Eicha Yudif Echad Elef, David was able to accomplish only 800, and when he was bothered by that, and he wonders why, there was a bas called Rach Bidvar Uriah Kiti, because he messed up in the whole matter of Uriah and Bathsheba. So in other words, David himself was only able to achieve 800. So now Rebbe could have said, sure, I can teach you the other 200. But Rebbe didn't want to make himself seem greater than David HaMelech. So therefore he says, our ancestors, referring to David HaMelech, have forgotten it, meaning they could have had it, but David didn't quite do the right thing with Bathsheba. We have never even seen it, even though, of course, he did, because he would have been Zoichat all 1,000 of them. Okay.
was like, by the time that she put the
shomrim, that's exactly the pasuk that Ramosha Tzvi brings in this connection. Ha'elof l'cha shloima, umasayim l'notur mesperio, where he understands that notur mesperio means those who preserve the kedusha of their bris intact. Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of the wealth and the opulence in Rebbe that still existed in Rebbe's times, Rebbe himself, we know from various Gemaras, was very rich. So now the Gemara tells something about that. Rebbe Ovid Lehilula, Reb Shimon Brei, Rebbe made a chasana for his son, Reb Shimon, V'loi Azmine Lebar Kapara, but he did not invite his Talmud Bar Kapara. Now, why not? The Ran says because the Bar Kapara was a very jovial kind of guy. He was a badchan, as we're going to go on to say in the story. And Rebbe was concerned that he's going to disrupt the wedding. Basically, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, Rebbe himself was always very serious, and therefore he didn't want Bar Kapara around by the wedding. The Medrash in Kehelas Rabbah tells the story with some variations, and there it says that Rebbe just forgot to invite Bar Kapara. Whatever the case, Bar Kapara wasn't invited. Kostavar Beis Gnona. So he, who was the he, on the face of it, it's Bar Kapara, wrote on the wall of the Chasana Hall, Chaf Dalad Alfin Riboyan Dinrin Nafkiar Beis Gnona Dain. 24,000 times 10,000 dinarim, so you're talking 240 million dinarim, was spent on this wedding hall, V'loi Azmanei LeBar Kapara, and Bar Kapara wasn't invited. So, now the words V'loi Azmanei LeBar Kapara are not in the printed Gemara, and in that case, the Gemara is not saying that point. In that case, you could understand that it's Rebbe himself wrote that on the wall. But the geus that we have here in Ein Yaakov is that Bar Kapara himself is writing. Is that Bar Kapara is writing it? So according to the first of all, what does that mean? The Ran explains that this huge amount of money we're talking about is for the wedding expenses. Marsha says it seems a little hard to say that it means for the whole Suda. You're spending such an enormous amount of money. It rather means for the hall itself. They had a minig in those times. They would have the wedding in a building, in a hall of some kind, and then after that they would gift that to the Chosin and Kala, and that would be their house. So he's saying that they spent that amount of money. And didn't invite Bar Kapara. So on the surface of it, at least we're talking about that it's Bar Kapara writing that on the wall, saying that, look at this, Rebbe's not doing right. Another way of understanding it would actually be that Rebbe himself is writing that, so everybody should know how much he's putting into this wedding, but yet he didn't invite Bar Kapara, and then the next words of the Gemara are Bar Kapara's comments on the subject. Omer Lohoin, or Lay, so Bar Kapara says, if this is what happens, if this is what there is for those who violate Hashem's will, how much more so for those who do Hashem's will? So on the surface of it, and this is how the Mefarish explains, is Bar Kapara is talking about the contrast between Rebbe and himself. It sounds like he's calling Rebbe that you're over at Ritzonei, and look at this, you have so much wealth and opulence and everything, that you're spending such an enormous amount of money on the Simcha, and I, the Oseh Ritzonei, you're not inviting. The question, though, with that would be, I mean, how could Bar Kapara say such a chutzpahdika thing about Rebbe, call him over at Ritzonei? So there are many, many, many different explanations about it. Marsha explains that what it is he definitely meant it l'shvach, but what he meant is, sometimes you have, we know there are tzaddikim, who are zoicha l'beiz shulchonis, as the Gemara expresses it, that they're zoicha both to greatness in Torah and to greatness in wealth and power. Rebbe had that. The Gemara elsewhere says that on him, Torah gdula b'makam echad. So he's saying, im l'ovre ritzonei kach, if you find that there are wealthy and comfortable people in this world who are over the tzone, who are violating what Hashem wants, how much more so that Rebbe and people like him, Oso the tzone, deserve to have even more than that. But then they misunderstood him and thought that he was saying something negative against Rebbe, so then they ended up inviting him to the chasana, and then he clarified what he was saying in the first place. So according to Marsha, he was never saying anything in the first place against Rebbe. Now, there are a lot of other different explanations about it. Iyun Yaakov refers over here to, the Iyun Yaakov was a famous Rav in his times. He wrote other important svarim, including Shailas Atrubas, Shavus Yaakov. So he explains in one of his Shailas Atrubas over there, and everybody else after that refers to it, that what Dr. Kapara is talking about is actually, it's a question like this. Now, again, the Gemara is going to go on to say over here that Rebbe was always very serious and sad over the Churban and over the troubles of the Jewish people. Whereas Dr. Kapara took the view, you have to be Ivdus Hashem the Simcha. So now you find at the end of Makkos, you have the famous story involving Rabbi Akiva and his Chaverim, where they came to the site of the Mishnikta. Of course, they came to Rome. They were coming to Rome, and they're hearing the tumult over there of how wealthy and successful they are. And then they went to the, then later on, they went to the site of the Harabayas, and they saw it destroyed and foxes running around. And in both cases, they cried, and Rabbi Akiva laughed, and they asked him why. And the first one, he explains to them with Rome that Imla Ovid, it's an attack, the Romans who are violating what Hashem wants, and Hashem gives them so much wealth and power and everything. How much more so, Lo said it's only how much more so is waiting for us Jews. So therefore, so the Ion Yaakov explains that Bar Kapara was hinting at that story with his phrase over here. What he means is, in other words, he's by writing that on the wall, he's hinting at this point that if the Ovri Sonoi are able to be so wealthy and powerful and everything, how much more so the Ovri Sonoi, and therefore this is meant as a coded message to Rebbe, don't think you always have to be so sad and serious in the time of Golos. No, you can instead be like Rabbi Akiva and be happy and realize that that Mashiach is yet going to come and there's going to be even greater greatness for us. So everybody brings that, although the Chidah has some problems with it. So the Chidah rather explains that what Bar Kapara is actually referring to is the guests by the wedding. He's saying that the guests by the wedding, given that Rebbe is being too serious and he's not inviting Bar Kapara the Badchan, so it comes out nobody is being Sameach Chosin Bekala. Well, then they're over Bachamisha Koilis. So therefore, in over Ritzone Kach, if they're over Ritzone and yet they have such a fancy wedding, Lo'Oser Ritzone, Alachas Kama Bekama, how much more so it would be if they were Oser Ritzone and they were Sameach Chosin Bekala the way they're supposed to be. Then you have another explanation that the Chassam Sofer brings in the name of his brother-in-law. The Chassam Sofer was married twice. His second wife was the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eger. So now Rabbi Akiva Eger's son, Rabunim, was Chassam Sofer's brother-in-law. So he brings this following Pirush in his name. That it is referring to Rebbe, and Bar Kapara is calling Rebbe. How could he call Rebbe over to Ritzono? Because we find here and in other places, we've learned in Ksubas, that Rebbe never had any Hana from this world. As much as he was rich and everything, and he had, as the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, he always had the rarest vegetables on his table all the time. He personally never had any Hana from this world. He says right before he passed away, he lifted up his 10 fingers, and he said that I never had any Hana from this world. So therefore, Bar Kapara is calling him out on that, and saying that in a way over its owner, that it is to put you in the world that you should be able to enjoy, that you should be able to enjoy the gashmius of it and use it and use it for Avodas Hashem. And then you have the Ksav Sofer, the Chassam Sofer's son, gives yet another explanation that he says that what does he say? Let me think a second. I have to remember this one. Alright, meanwhile, there's also the Tiferes Tzion explains another point as well. There must have been Goyish guests by the party. Rebbe was the Nasi, the Pashtus, he has to stay on good terms with the Goyish rulers, so Bar Kapara is referring to them. If they're enjoying this wedding so much, Lo'osir Ritzono, the Jewish people who do Hashem's Ritzon, Alachas Kama V'Kama. We find, by the way, with Nehemiah, when he was the governor of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of the Second Mishnah, he also mentions having Goyim by his table, because what should you have? A Jewish ruler, a Jewish politician has to be able to do like that. He has to keep on good terms with the Goyim and invite them to his parties. So the Ksav Sofer says like this. He says, think about it. Rebbe is making this wedding, and he's obviously trying to do what everybody likes. Now, why didn't he invite me? Mistama, because he knows he doesn't want me to be my badchan self. So therefore, he didn't invite me in order that I shouldn't feel uncomfortable. So he's saying, im lo'oser, it's im lo'ovre ritzone kach. So therefore, he's saying ovre ritzone about himself. Madach Rebbe is trying to look out for the best for me, the ovre ritzone, he's calling himself, that he doesn't want to invite me to a place where I know I'm not going to be comfortable because I can't be myself. Lo'oser ritzone, well, then the other wedding guests, alachas kama v'kama, that Rebbe must be doing everything for that he can for them. So then the bottom line is, according to these various explanations, according to some of them, he is in fact calling Rebbe over Ritzono for one reason or another, and according to other explanations, he's referring over Ritzono to others, the Goyish guests, or the Goyim in the world at large, or himself, etc. Whatever the case, they didn't understand him. Asmenei, so Rebbe invited him to the wedding. Asmin is, so Rebbe invited him to the wedding. Omar, so now Ben now Bakapara says the other way around. Lo oseh ritzone ba'olam hazeh kach. Madach, those who do what Hashem wants in this world have such great wealth. Lo olam haba, lachas kama v'kama, how much more so those who do Hashem's will get so much more in olam haba. So again, according to the explanations that he, to begin with, said it as a derogatory thing about Rebbe, so now that Rebbe invited him, he changed it, and according to those who learned that to begin with, he was saying it in a coded way, and they didn't fully understand him, so now he's clarifying himself that no, of course, Rebbe is in the category of Oseh Ritzono, and imagine how much more wealth is waiting for him in Olam Haba. The Medrash, by the way, when it tells the story, tells a little bit differently. We're saying that Rebbe forgot to invite Bakapara to the wedding afterwards when Bakapara pointed that out to him, so it was better. I guess it was too late to invite him or something. So therefore, so instead, Rebbe made the next party in honor of the wedding, one of the Sheva Brachas, then he invited Bakapara. Okay. So the Gemara continues, speaking about Rebbe and Bakapara. Yoima de Machich Bei Rebbe Asya Puranusa Ba'alma. On a day when Rebbe would laugh, then Puranus, then punishment would come to the world. Now again, there's a lot of different explanations why that should be. Why is Rebbe never allowed to be happy in his lifetime? So Maharsha gives the reason because Rebbe was a Baal Yisurin. We know for this Gemara in Bava Metzia that tells us that Rebbe was suffering Yisurin for many years. And that it was a kapara, it helped the whole world. They didn't even need rain during that time. The Gemara points out, as much as rain is a bracha, it sometimes also can be an inconvenience. So in Rebbe's times, there was so much moisture in the air, the plants were able to grow beautifully without actually needing the inconvenience of rain. So therefore, during that time, Rebbe is going to laugh, then it means that the world is not going to gain that benefit, so therefore instead some kind of disaster is coming to the world. Now, on the other hand, what was Bakapara's view of the matter? Bakapara took the view that, again, a yid has to be v'simcha. As we find, in fact, that if he's besimcha, then he'll be able to come to Olam Haba more easily. There's a Gemara in Tainus, for example, that tells about two people who were they would make it their business to always be mesameach people who are in a bad mood or a quarrel or whatever, and with that they were zeicha to Olam Haba. So Bakapara figured that Rebbe should be the same way as well. Iyun Yaakov gives another point as well. We have in Pirkei Avos, Schoik v'kalos rosh magilun asa'odim la'erva, that laughter is one of those things that make a person prone to arayas. Rebbe, being Rabbeinu HaKodesh, where again, he went to the nth degree, to the ultimate degree, as far as staying away from any possibility of erva, and therefore he's called Rabbeinu HaKodesh, so for him, laughter wouldn't be appropriate. Then you have Rabbeinu Bachaye gives an explanation that, again, Bakapara figured that a yid has to be the simcha, and he figured with simcha, then Rebbe will be able to learn and teach Torah better. Rebbe, meanwhile, took the view, a person always has to be, and similar to what the Rambam says, always has to be the kava mitzua, always on the middle ground, neither too much in one direction or the other, and so Rebbe figured that if Rebbe didn't want to laugh, because then that would be too far over to one extreme, and then that would upset the equilibrium, the medium point that he's supposed to be at. And there's many different other explanations about what the nub of the argument was between Rebbe and Bakapara about whether Rebbe should laugh or not. Anyway, so Omale the Bakapara loy tevadchon. So he tells Bakapara, I don't want you to try to make me laugh. He knew, again, Bakapara is a jovial kind of person. He's going to make him laugh. So he tells him, don't. And if you do that, if you keep to your word, then I'll give you 40 grivi of wheat. A griva is usually translated as a saw, so it would be quite a large amount. It would be quite a large amount of wheat. Why Dafka 40? Iyun Yaakov points out it represents the 40 days when the Torah was given. Also, he mentions there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that tells that Antoninus used to send Rebbe every day a sack full of wheat, so therefore Rebbe had plenty of wheat available, and therefore he's offering some of it to Bakapara if he keeps his promise. But Bakapara answers, Lech Zimar, Rebbe, take a look and you'll see, the kol grievan de v'inna shekilna. I'll be able to take as many saw as I want. I'm not limited dafka to your 40 saw. Shokol de kula rabba, so Bakapara took a large basket, tachya b'kufra, he smeared it with tar, so it would be waterproof and fill in all the holes and all that, so nothing falls out. The sach fayal reshe, and he turned it upside down. There's two different ways of understanding sach fayal reshe. It can mean that he turned it upside down, or it can mean, that's the Ran learns it means he just turned it upside down. Maharsha learns that it means he put it on his own head. He put it upside down over his own head, like the way Maharsha compares to like the way we wear Purim costumes. Anyway, He comes to V'ozol, and he comes to Rebbe V'omalei, and he says Leichol limara boin grivi chiti derashin and bach. Rebbe, measure out for me, please, the 40 saw of wheat that you owe me. Now what? He's going to do it in an upside down basket or a basket that's on his head. And besides, the whole point was he's not supposed to make Rebbe laugh. Achich Rebbe, Rebbe laughed. And then he says, "Lava azartich, lava azhartacha, delights of adchan." Didn't I already warn you not to make me laugh for any of the reasons that we said before? By the way, the Shittim of Kubetzis makes another point about it as well, why it was so bad if Rebbe would laugh. Rebbe was always feeling serious and somewhat sad about the Churban. So therefore, for him to be laughing at a time like this, this is similar to the Shavuos Yaakov's explanation before about the argument between Bakapara and Rebbe, where Bakapara is saying you can be more in that regard like Rebbe Akiva, but Rebbe held the view that he needs to be constantly sad over the Churban and not feel so happy when we're in Golos as long as there's a Churban. We find, by the way, interestingly, in that connection, we find a medrash in Eicha Rabbah, where it says there was a certain posik in Eicha where Rebbe would dash in 24 drushas on a certain posik, and then Rebbe Yochanan, a generation later, would dash in 60 drushas. So the medrash asks, what does that mean? Did Rebbe Yochanan know more on this posik than Rebbe? And the answer is no. Rebbe knew all the drushas that Rebbe Yochanan did, but once he would get through 24 of them, he would be so overcome with tears that he couldn't continue. Because he lived a generation closer to the Churban than Rabbi Yochanan, so he really felt it personally in a way that Rabbi Yochanan, who lives in a later generation, didn't. And so that fits very well with this, with what the Shittim of Kubetzis is saying over here, that therefore Rebbe felt that it's inappropriate for him to laugh.
On Shabbos and Yom Tov,
did he laugh? I mean, hopefully he wasn't sad over the Churban, but still there's a difference between not being sad and laughing. Mind you, I mean, the Minchas Alozer actually says a vort on this, that Bar Kapara took the view, fine, that, you know, it's one thing for Rebbe to be sad, but we don't want him to be Moreh Shchoredik, we don't want him to be depressed, and therefore he's trying to cheer him up, but anyway. So Rebbe laughed as a result of what Bar Kapara did over here with the upside down basket. Omalei says, Lavaz Hautacholet Deloit Tevadchan, didn't I warn you not to make me laugh? Omalei, and Bakapara kind of still playing along with the joke. He says, Chiti derashin and kanasivna, I'm only coming to collect the wheat that you owe me, meaning, in other words, Marashah says it's like he's making almost another joke of it. Like, here, Rebbe is telling him, listen, you didn't keep to your side of the deal, therefore I don't owe you the 40 saw of wheat. So Bakapara pretends as though, never mind that, but there's a different debt of wheat that you owe me from previously, and I'm here to collect that. So like he's still trying to continue the joke, kind of. Getting back to the wedding that we said before, or maybe it was a different wedding, Omalei Bakapara, it was the same wedding, as the Gemara goes on to say, the wedding of Reb Shimon de Rebbe that we said before. So Omalei Bakapara Lebrate de Rebbe. So before the wedding, Bakapara says to, or before the Sheva Barachas that we were talking about, whichever the one that Bakapara ended up being invited to, he tells Rebbe's daughter, Lemocher Shasina Chamra, tomorrow I will be drinking wine at this wedding, Birikuda de Avuch, accompanied by the dancing of your father over kurkani de imach, and with the kurkani of your mother. Now, what is kurkani? The Ran explains that it means singing. He explains that kurkani is Meloshan makarka, which means like crowing, like the noise that a chicken makes or something, like the crowing of a rooster. So he's saying so it refers to her singing or like croaking or some sound like that. The Mefarish translates it as that she's going to pour me wine. In the event, as the Gemara goes on to tell the story, she didn't. She neither sang nor poured him wine. But a lot of the Mefarishim deal with the question: how is he even saying that such a thing hypothetically would happen anyway? What happened to Kol Isha Erva? What happened to you not allowed to have a woman serve you? So a number of Achronim give different possibilities how it couldn't be made to work lahalacha. Maybe doing the simcha of a wedding is a special exception. Maybe Bakapara was on a high enough level as a tzaddik that there's no problem of hirhurim for him. A number of different answers that they give. But Ben Yehoyada gives a couple of interesting points. So he says that ultimately it refers to Bakapara as referring to deep things in Kabbalah, and he talks about how the father and the mother over here, Rebbe and his wife, represent respectively Yaakov and Rachel, and it refers to high things in Olam HaSoyonim that they represent. But anyway, he says that also kurkani de'imach could mean not so much singing, but rather the kind of high-pitched noise that they do even now in some Sfardish communities. You have by simcha, la 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 la, so that's not singing. That wouldn't be an issue of kol be'isha. Actually, Ben Yehoyada points out an interesting thing in this connection. He says, you know, the Medrash says that when Yaakov was when Yaakov was supposed to be marrying Rachel, and meanwhile Laban brought him Leah instead. So the Medrash says the people of the town were also in on the scam together with Laban. They knew that he's substituting Leah for Rachel. They were singing a song that the refrain of it was something like He Leah, He Leah, He Leah. So that way, when the next morning, when Yaakov discovers what happened, and he goes to Laban and complains, Loma Rimi Sonny, why'd you cheat me? And then the Medrash says he also went to the townspeople and said, well, why did you cheat me? And they said, we didn't. We were trying to warn you. He Leah. She is Leah. So Ben Yehoyada says, maybe based on this, maybe it was the same kind of thing. They're doing this. Blah, 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 blah. So they're doing it in a way that makes it to make it sound like He Leah, but so that way they could claim later on that they were trying to warn him without actually warning him. Anyway, so he says that's what it means, kukene de imach over here. So in that case, there'd be no issue of kola, of kolisha. Okay. So what actually happened by the wedding, or by the Sheva Brachos, the Gemara continues. Benalosa chasne de Rebbe Hava. Benalosa, and that was we don't know his first name, but the Gemara is only identifying him by his father's name, as we'll talk about, we'll learn soon, versus Hashem, why that is. Anyway, chasne de Rebbe Hava, he was Rebbe's son-in-law, but Osher Godol Hoya, and he was very rich. Umato Asmanil Behilula did Rav Shimon Berebi. So now Bakapora came to this wedding or the Sheva Brachas of Rav Shimon Berebi. And in the course of the wedding or the Simcha, Omale Bakapora Lerebi, my Toeva. We find in the Torah, when it calls it, we're talking about Mishkav Zohar, it calls it Te'eva. In other words, there's a couple of dozen Arayas that it talks about over there, but no other one is called Te'eva. And vice versa, there are a number of other Isurim in the Torah that are called Te'eva, but only by Mishkav Zohar do you have both, where it's one of the Arayas, and uniquely among them it's called Te'eva. And in fact, twice, once in Achrimos when it warns you not to do it, and once in Parshas Kedoshim when it talks about the punishment for it. So why, what's this word Te'eva mean? Called the Omalei Rebbe, the Hochi Hu Te'eva, Akshay Bakapara. So Rebbe started explaining different explanations of what Te'eva means and why Mishkav Zohar is called that, and every one of them Bakapara slugged up. Omalei Rebbe Porish Ak. So eventually Rebbe gives up and he says to Bakapara, fine, you tell me what's the meaning of Te'eva in this context. Omalei. So he tells him, Tasi Devesu, Turmali Nakla. Let Rebbe's wife come and pour me a cup of wine. Asir Amule, sure enough, she poured for him. So that bears out when he said before, B'krukeni de'imach, and the Mefarish says, it means you're going to see that your mother, the Rebbetzin, the wife of the Nasi, is going to pour me a cup of wine. So now that taka came true. Omule the Rebbe, kum rekoidli v'omalach, and he says to Rebbe, come dance for me, and then I'll tell you. And Rebbe went ahead with it because Rebbe wanted, obviously we see from the story, Rebbe wanted so much to know a new concept in Torah that he didn't know before that he's willing even to set aside his kavod, the kavod of the Nasi of the Jewish people and the kavod of his Rebbetzin just in order and in order to be able to learn something new in Torah. Omalei. So now when Rebbe does that, he says, Hochi Omarachmana, Te'eva means Toya Ata Bo. You are going astray with it. In other words, it's one thing, Arayas between a man and a woman, fine. A man has a taiva for a woman. But to go after a man, which is something completely unnatural, so therefore, so Toya Ata Bo, you're going astray with it. It's something, in other words, it's something completely unnatural. Well, yeah, ba meaning in it, in the arayas, in the erva of a zohar, erva is lashon nekeva. Lekosach rina omale. Then they came. It was time to drink another cup during the simcha. So Bakapara says to Rebbe, my tevel. What does it mean when it also in the parasha of arayas, you have for a man to have relations with an animal. The pasuk says on it tevel, who actually about a woman, by a woman who has relations with an animal. So it says calls it tevel who. So what's this word tevel? So again, it happened like before, that Rebbe is trying to find answers, and every one of them, Bakapara, is shrugging up. Do for me what I tell you. Ovid, true enough, he does, that his Rebbetzin pours him a cup, and he dances for him. And then he explains, Tevel, who means Tavlin Yeshba, is there a spice in it? Like, what would make a person think that there's any, why would a person even have a taiva for such a thing? Is there any taiva? At least in Mishkav Zohar, at least you could say, you know, it's a human being. But here it's an animal as well. So it's an animal. It's not even the same species as a person. So why would a person even have a taiva for such a thing? It's something completely unnatural. Maharsha points out, now we have the word tevel that mentions in the parasha of Arayis also with a man and his daughter-in-law. The difference is, there you can say, Rashi mentions that they're tevel who means that there's a bilbo. You're mixing up zera'av and zera'aben. You're mixing up the descendant, the two different generations. But with a person and an animal, where it's impossible for any children to be produced from it, then it can't mean that, so therefore he explains that it means like that. The question, mishan yahoda bia mikolon bias. Is such a bia different than any other? How is such a bia different than all the other ones? How is it that she abandons somebody, a fellow human being like her, and goes after a behema? So therefore, the pasuk calls it in a derogatory word, tevel. Then umay zima. Then Vakapara does a third one. What is it? In connection with another thing of Arayas, where a man. So in connection with a couple of Arayas, it uses the word zima. But Maharsha explains, specifically the reference to Zima over here is actually where the Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, Al techalalas bitcha lahaznoisa, don't allow your daughter to become, to be loosely available to everybody, because then the earth will be full of Zima. The Gemara explains, we're talking about Pnuya, so there's no issue of Ashes issue, Arayas or anything like that. However, there is an issue that then she's going to have children from different fathers, and the children aren't going to know who their fathers are, and the result is that siblings may end up marrying one another, and there's going to be problems with Mamzerus and all that. So why does the Torah use the word Zima in that connection? And the same thing, when a man goes and marries women, and the Gemara mentions that by the same token, a man goes and marries women in different places, you have the other problem, that then, again, they may end up meeting up and marrying, etc. The same thing happened, that Bakapara is challenging Rebbe to do whatever he wants before he gives him the answer. Finally, Bakapara gives him the answer. Omale Zumahi. This, what is it? Meaning, in other words, that's the point. The whole reason for it is that what is this? Whose children are these? And you can come to Sophic Mamzeus. The Maharal has an explanation why Bakapara did davka these three drushes, all of which have to do with things of Arayas, and he explains, because basically we're talking about a wedding over here, as we said before. It was a very expensive wedding, and there was a huge amount of enjoyment for Gashmias, so Bakapara wants to tell everybody in his own badchonistic way. It's not stam badchonis, he wants to teach them a lesson in that you should realize that Gashmias is not really worth very much in itself. That whether we're talking about Toya Ataba, or Tevel, Tavlin Yeshba, or Zumahi, you should realize what are all these things worth. They're not really worth anything as just the Gashmias by itself. Gashmias is only worthwhile as if it serves Ruchnias. Well, the Gemara says, Lo Yochel Ben Alossa L'Mispel. Ben Alossa, the son-in-law of Rebbe, couldn't stand it that Rebbe was being so humiliated like that. And Ben Alossa himself was rich. He was also, Ion Yaakov points out, he was from a Meyuchastika family. He understands that he's called Ben Alossa because he descended from the family of Rabbi Shmuel Ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol. So he himself is rich. He himself is a Meyuchas. So he couldn't stand seeing his shver being insulted like that. Come v'nofer, kuva in semitamon. So he and his wife got up and left the simcha. The Medrash in Kehelis, by the way, when it tells the story about Rebbe, about Bakapara, about the Simcha, it mentions another thing that happened over there, is that Bakapara was entertaining the people with Mishalim so much so that they weren't interested in the food. So Rebbe, after all, wonders, how come it is? Food's being brought out of the kitchen, and the plates are coming back to the kitchen untouched. So what happened? And he finds out because Bakapara is busy entertaining everybody with Mishalim and with Mishalim to illustrate various points in Torah. So the Gemara says, my Ben Alossa. What about Ben Alossa? So the Mefarish explains that it means, how do we know that he was rich? But Maharsha says, no, that's not what it means. We know he was rich because the Braisa just told us before that he was rich. No, the question is, why is he being called Ben Alossa? Why isn't he called by his personal name? So the answer is going to come out from the following story. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Loy l'chinam pisa ben al-osa es ma'osev. It's not for nothing that ben al-osa spent a lot of his money, elo l'haris behen tespodas shal kohen gadol. He wanted to learn and to have his own hair cut in the style of the kohen gadol. As Ion Yaakov had learned, that he himself is actually a descendant of the kohen gadol, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, so therefore he had a particular interest in it.
Every day?
I don't know, the kohen gadol didn't cut his hair every day, he cut it every week. So does this mean he did it as a one-time thing? Does it mean he constantly did it? Doesn't say. But in any case, he spent an enormous amount of money. That's a very complicated haircut. Dichtiv kosen yichsimu as rasheihim. The pasuk says that the kohenim should cut their hair kosen yichsimu, which means Meforshim explain it comes from the word kusemes, spelt, because spelt stalks grow in the way that the Gemara is going to describe over here. Now Yechezkel is actually talking about it, about the kohenim in general. So there's a number of details that Yechezkel mentions in his last prakim that seem to be different than the way the Torah says things. Some of them are the Gemara in a couple of places explains that maybe, in fact, it is referring only to the Kohen Gadol, but a number of them are Meforshim explain there that it means that La'asid Lava, in the third Beis Hamikdash, the regular Kohenim will have the same degree of Kedusha as the Kohen Gadol in earlier times, and therefore they'll all have to take this special haircut. In any case, what is this kind of haircut? Tana, we learn in a braisa, ka'in luluyonis. It's a luluyonis style of haircut. Well, my luluyonis, well, what does that mean? Om Rabbi Yehuda, tispurka yechidza. It means a unique kind of haircut. There's no other haircut like it. Now, what is this? So back up. So Marsha explains that the question according to Marsha was, why are we calling him Ben Alossa rather than calling him by his personal name? The reason is like this. So we figure like this. Often it happens, we see Maisim B'chol Yoyim, people who earn their own money tend to be very careful with it, as opposed to people who inherited a fortune from their ancestors. Not always do they realize the value of money, and sometimes they end up squandering it. So here we're saying, Ben Alossa did spend a huge amount of his money, but it wasn't on wasteful things like many other heirs of rich people do. Rather, he did it for a good purpose, in order to learn and in order to preserve the style of haircut of the Kohen Gadol for future generations, and maybe to get that haircut himself. Anyway, heichi dami, what exactly is the nature of this haircut? It means that the tip of one hair exactly touches the root of the next hair next to it. So a couple of Meforshim discuss what the symbolism behind it is. Habona at the bottom of the page over here explains that the Kohen Gadol is supposed to constantly be focused on the Shekhinah, and therefore that represents also that, in other words, like the one hair goes directly into the next one, representing that his mind is constantly focused on it. Of course, there's an explanation that it means that he should be humble, like you should always remember his roots. Whatever the case, it's a special kind of haircut. This is the haircut of the Kohen Gadol, so it's a very difficult thing to do, and therefore Ben Alossa had to spend an enormous amount of money in order to learn it, in order to get such a haircut himself. Further on, the Gemara talks about, talking about these various cases where a person makes a neder not to eat various kinds of food. So the Mishnah mentions there can be a case where he says dog or dogim, and the Gemara also talks about what if he says dogga. So is there a difference in meaning between dog and dogga? So first the Gemara tries to say that they mean different sizes of fish. Maybe a dog means a large fish, and dog go would mean a small fish. So the Gemara says, Ksiv, though, we have the pasuk about Yonah. Vayiman Hashem dog gadol livloyas Yonah. First the pasuk says that Hashem appointed a big fish to swallow Yonah. So we see that dog means dafka, a big fish. But the Gemara asks, "Voksiv vayispalo Yonah v'gamim mea dog ga." But the next pasuk says that Yonah davened to Hashem from the belly of the dog ga. So what is it? A dog or a dog ga? So the Gemara says, "Holy kasha, that's not a problem. Dumei palte dog ga the labale dog cotton chola. Maybe the big fish spat him out, and then a small fish swallowed him, and he ended up in the belly of a small fish." And the Gemara goes on with the discussion of what dog versus dog ga means. But in any case, Marsha points out that in fact the Medrash says exactly that. What happened was, when Yonah was thrown into the sea by the sailors over there, then he got in, he was swallowed up by the big fish. He was very comfortable in there. The fish's eyes, the Medrash goes into great detail, the fish's eyes were like two windows. He's looking out through them, he's seeing everything that's going on under sea. He's been given a nice tour of the site under the Mishnikdash and the gates of Gan Eden and so forth, and he's having a good time with it. So he didn't think to daven. So what does the Eibush to do? He makes it that fish spits him out, and he ends up in the belly of a smaller fish, a female. That one is carrying a bunch of eggs, so now it's very crowded in there. Now when it's crowded and it's less comfortable, then he thought to daven. Marsha points out, though, it seems a little hard in that case to understand, because at the end, the pasuk says, Vayom Hashem la dog, Hashem said to the dog, which according to this would mean the big fish again. So what does that mean? The small fish threw him out again, and then the big fish swallowed him, and that one let him out onto dry land. Doesn't say one way or the other, but in any case, the Medrash does make that point, that there were actually two different fish involved over here. Speaking of fish, actually, now you have a very rare thing. You have the Ein Yaakov was published a few decades before the Maharsha was born. So his Pirushim over here of Chiddush HaGadus are structured according to Ein Yaakov. But here he has the following piece over here that doesn't appear in Ein Yaakov. It's part of the regular Gemara itself, and nevertheless Maharsha comments on it. There's a piece of Gemara further on, talking about more about fish on the subject of when is it good to eat fish and when not. The Gemara discusses sometimes when a person is sick, then fish is bad for him, other times it's good. So the Gemara brings in this connection that Shmuel says a way to remember it. You think of the letters Nun, Samach, and Ayin in order in the Aleph phase. Nun in Aramaic also means a fish. Samach is related to the word Sama, which means a cure. And ayin is like the word ayin, the eye. So Shmuel says from that, you have a hint for that, nuna sama la'inayin. Fish is a remedy for the eye. And the Gemara explains it means if a person had an eye infection, then at a certain stage of it, then fish is good for him. So Maharsha brings in this connection, an interesting point. We find when the Jewish people were complaining about the man in the Midbar the second time, in Parshas Ba'aloisa, the first time actually, in Parshas Ba'aloisa, they complain that we remember the fish we used to eat in Mitzrayim, and now all we have is the man. So Maharsha says this fits very nicely with this Gemara. They were saying bilti ala mon einenu. They were saying now we only have mon for our eyes. We don't have fish, which according to this Gemara, according to what Shmuel was saying in this Gemara, is good for your eyes. Now we don't have that. Only we have mon for our eyes, and it's not going to be so curative for our eyes as fish would be. Yeah. Okay. Even though they can taste every taste, I guess they figured that it still doesn't have the same effect. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'olah of Zayin Shvat. You have the concept of Malav Malka, and you have Al Derech HaDurush. So you have like this. The Beis Yosef famously says that there's a certain aver in a person which only benefits from the food they eat Matzah Shabbos. So the Etzim Luz. So it doesn't gain from the Sodas of Shabbos, only the Soda of Matzah Shabbos. Now, why is that? So the El Yerabba there on Shulchan Aruch, on the tour, explains that the Etzim Luz did not get anything when Odom and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, because it only gets from the food you eat Matzah Shabbos, and they ate from the Eitz Hadas and Erev Shabbos. So that's why the Luz bone never disappears, because the whole concept of death came from the Chet Eitz Hadas, so therefore the Etzim Luz did not benefit from the Eitz Hadas, then therefore that's higher than the whole concept of death, and that's why the body will be rebuilt from it by Tchias Meisim. And so that is the deeper idea behind the Malav HaMalka, is to fix up the Chet Eitz Hadas. Continuing on Halachas of Eruv Chatzeiros, suppose you have two courtyards or that are one further back than the other. So the only way to get from the inner one out to the street is by going through the outer one. Sometimes you have nowadays, sometimes you have some apartment buildings also arranged that way. So if they want, they can make one Eruv together. If they don't make an Eruv together, then the people in the inner one can make their own Eruv, and they'll be allowed to carry in their chotzer, but the people in the outer one will not. Whether it's that the outer one didn't make an eruv at all, whether they made an eruv and it didn't work. If the ones from the inner one did not make an eruv or their eruv was ineffective, then the outer one's eruv is not going to work either, because the inner ones, the bnei apnimis, they're constantly walking through the outer one. It's called drisa saregel, and the result is that they aser the outer one. The basic idea with an eruv chaseris is any time that you have two or more people that have reshus in one area, then you need an eruv chaseris. Here the idea is the people from the inner one are walking through the outer one. They have a certain reshus over there, and therefore if they didn't make an eruv of their own, the Gemara calls it regel ha'osubim koima, where they're not allowed to carry in their own area, in their own inner chotzer, then they also aser, the result is they aser the outer chotzer as well. So then on the other hand, if you have the inner one, there's only one yid, so then one person by himself doesn't need an eruv, so then he's not asking the outer one. And the bottom line is you have some certain complications over here. The bottom line is make sure to make an eruv chatzeris before Shabbos, and check with a rav to make sure that you do it right, because otherwise you may have issues with carrying in and out of your houses on Shabbos if you need to do so.